This podcast is brought to you by Carl Zeiss Meditech. The authors slash speakers have a contractual or other financial relationship with Carl Zeiss Meditech AG and its affiliates, and have received financial support. Products, services, or offers referenced in this video may not be available in all countries, and product labeling varies by country.
Hello, this is Dr. Bill Wiley. I'm a refractive cataract surgeon in Cleveland, Ohio. Currently the medical director of Clear Choice Laser Eye Center and Cleveland Eye Clinic, both divisions of Midwest Vision Partners. Yeah, I've been using Smile for some time. We were early users back in 2016 and had kind of a slower start. And over the past 6-7 years, have gradually built our volume to now having Smile be our preferred corneal refractive surgery method. And I'll turn it over to Luke, a good friend of mine for a long time. And Luke, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Always great to be here with you. So yeah, I'm Dr. Luke Brebnich. I am the medical director of Clearsight LASIK and 43 Vision in Oklahoma City. Like Bill, we were early adopters to Smile. We had it before we could treat astigmatism. Kind of started slow, went through some trials and tribulations, kind of stopped doing as much for a while. Actually had one of his doctors from his practice, Jeff Augustine, come out to kind of give us some pointers, and I'm glad that he did. Like Bill, Smile is now our premium laser refractive procedure. And it's really been a fun journey to go from LASIK, which is already great, something that I'm thankful that we have, something I think I had. But the Smile, in my opinion, is just that next gen, next level. And I can't wait to do more and talk about it here.
Look, it looks like when you look at the data, Zeiss Smile is quickly growing around the world. It's amazing that there's already 1,600 VisuMax built. There's 2,500 practicing surgeons in over 80 countries. There's been over 800 peer-reviewed publications spanning 10 plus years. And probably the most amazing number is this over 7 million eyes treated with Smile. And I think it's just a testament to that sort of momentum we've seen building both in your practice and mine over the past 6 years since it's been approved. And Luke, I'm curious to get your thoughts on over worldwide as that momentum's built, any other thoughts on how we've seen Smile grow or thoughts why it's been growing as fast as it has been?
Yeah. Well, it's the first slide was very interesting and really exciting. I remember when the first million were performed, which really wasn't that long ago.
Yes.
We've just seen this explosive growth, especially in Asia, and of course the growth here in the United States. I mean, if the procedure wasn't effective and good for patients and good for practices, it wouldn't grow like this. There are plenty of examples of refractive procedures that have been tried but have not taken off. There are just so many benefits to it. STODS or dry eye, whichever you want to call it, has been shown to be better by numerous studies. Dan Reinstein is the one that I typically refer to. And that's great for it. It's easy to communicate to patients too. It's just patients get it. Zeiss Smile is just the next level, next iteration.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And when you look at that growth from 1 million eyes to 7 million, it is amazing. And like you, I do remember when they first announced the first million, and that was back in 2017, not that long ago. And you can just see that this exponential growth going from 1 million, then it doubled in 2 years to 2019. And then in another 2 years, it doubled again in 21 to 4 million. And then 2 years later, you expect we'll be again at 8 million in 2023. So it's sort of been doubling in growth every 2 years, which is amazing with this exponential growth over time. It looks very similar to what we saw in our practice. The first year, 2016, 2017, we just were maybe doing 5 or 10% of our practice with Smile. And we're mostly looking at patients that sort of as an alternative to PRK or certain high prescriptions, we sort of keyholed for Smile. But then once we saw that success with those early cases and over time, as we refined our technique and fine-tuned the laser and it got more approvals and more adjustability, we've sort of went from 10% in 2016, 2017 to probably 70 to 80% now for corneal refractive surgery. And more or less, we're treating every patient that qualifies. So from -1 all the way up to -8 or 9, we're treating, and patients sometimes have mixed astigmatism or hyperopia or high astigmatism that don't fit within the criteria. So obviously in those patients, we don't offer it, but pretty much everybody else that fits within the criteria we're looking to offer. And that's sort of sparked our growth. That's kind of matching that worldwide growth.
Yeah. It was interesting how you described that. Early on, we were looking for a reason to do SMILE. We were looking for that special case, the person that was very active and couldn't avoid touching their eyes for the first few days. And it was a very small percentage. I mean, 3-5%. And it's completely reversed. I mean, today we're looking for reasons not to do SMILE. And it's typically that really low prescription, high cylinder. I mean, it's very rare that the majority of that demographic that comes in does qualify for SMILE. And it's a fun discussion to talk about the benefits for us as physicians. It's kind of, it puts a smile on my face when I can see the counselor when I recommend SMILE, because they're usually in the room with me. And they just become more relaxed because they know that they have something that they can talk about that's differentiating. They can talk about something that's not just the old kind of tried and true, which again, LASIK is great. Zeiss SMILE is just, it's different and people like different. It's one of our PCCs or counselors talks about how this is not your mama's LASIK or not your daddy's LASIK. And I mean, I'm more or less in the South, and that tends to resonate here. So it's fun. It is that most highly converting procedure that we have, more than cataracts, more than lens exchange, more than any other procedure that we do. So it's, patients want it, they like it, the results are great. And I see this exponential growth continuing.
That's awesome. I love that. Not your mama's LASIK or not your daddy's LASIK, because LASIK, like you said, is great. And so it's hard to beat something that's already great. And a lot of patients, family members have had LASIK, or people come in and are thinking, yeah, I'm getting LASIK. And so sometimes it's hard to deviate against that. And so just building that comfort, talking to them and saying, why is SMILE better? And why do we prefer SMILE if the patient's a candidate? I saw patients, there's great, either path is a great path, but we do have some preferences for SMILE over LASIK. And it's nice little terms like that to kind of get that patient comfortable when they've had friends or family that have had LASIK and have had great results.
Totally agree. Bill, it sounds like you've had a lot of great success with Zeiss SMILE. There are a lot of people out there that are either on the fence or they're kind of dabbling in it. What would you tell that person that's thinking about getting into Zeiss SMILE?
Yeah, I think what I came to like about SMILE was it sort of helped improve some of the areas of LASIK that were falling a little short. Like we said, LASIK in general is amazing, but there are some patients with LASIK that have, let's say, dry eye, or some patients that ultimately need enhancements. And with any refractive surgery, that's a possibility. But those enhancement patients obviously are not necessarily practice builder. What we've seen is more or less with SMILE, we just really don't see dry eye perioperatively, and patients are comfortable almost immediately with less transection of corneal nerves. I think you get that faster recovery, and I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's been a lot of data out there on what are the 20/20 rates and what's the enhancement rate and the stability. I mean, there's just so much out there, and it can take a while to kind of sift through it. But for those who are doing a lot of this, it's like any new procedure, and it didn't just happen overnight. But we, now that we consider ourselves experts in both procedures, I can look at a patient in the eye and say, complications can happen with any procedure. We know this. And what I can tell you with SMILE is that even though complication rates are low no matter what, it's what we see is that you tend to be more comfortable. All the bad things that you hear about or read about, yeah, they can happen, but they're at a lower rate with SMILE. And I don't necessarily go into this with everyone, but we have a lot of engineers who come through our practice who want to know these details, and it's fun to go into the stats with them. I think one thing that helped get us to that level is the development of a nomogram. Number two, really working on her technique. I learned from the greats like Dan Reinstein and other surgeons throughout the country, and visited 5 practices actually to gain pointers from all of them. We modified our energy settings. We did things like we used to irrigate the interface. We no longer do that. Another thing that we found is that by distending the cap at the end of the procedure, we found that the day one results are even better. Another issue that I hear or concern that people have is, what about day one or week one results? And even though I would say that maybe it might be a bit slower with SMILE, it's at least clinically not the case anymore. Our 20/20 rate for day one smile is more or less the same as LASIK now that we've really optimized our energy settings and technique. How did you, so Bill, what about you? How did you get to the level that you are right now?
Yeah, I totally agree with all those thoughts. I think with any, like you said, with any new procedure, there is a learning curve. And this is a new technique or new skill set that doesn't translate from other surgeries. It's not similar to cataract surgery. It's not, it's, you know, different enough from PRK and LASIK that you are sort of using a new skill, and it does take time. I really don't see some of the large chain centers adopting SMILE quickly because I think to work through that learning curve might be challenging. And I think you've seen sort of more the traditional true refractive surgeons getting into SMILE that maybe are a little bit more willing to work through a learning curve. And I think you're going to see those type of practices adopt it sooner. So there was a learning curve. And then, like you said, also the early iterations of the laser were a little bit prohibitive to fast results. Number one, we had a limited amount of adjustability as far as the energy levels with the first iteration of the laser. And that sort of made it more challenging and affected the healing time. Also, without having the astigmatism correction, I think was also challenging. So only certain patients could get SMILE. And maybe we pushed the limit if somebody was on the borderline and might have had some still, but we said, oh, gosh, we don't want to have a flap. Let's push it a little bit. And next, we're doing SMILE on a patient that likely would have been better off having their cylinder treated or waiting. And that kind of slowed some of the adoption. I think all those things kind of add up to, you know, needing to be patient. And particularly when you adopt it, choose the right patients like you did. You know, you went around and learned from the best in the country, or if not the world, to gain those skill sets. I think now the fact that somebody adopted today, they're going to work through that learning curve quicker than we did early on, because we might not have had that sort of the collective knowledge that we do now. And so I think the learning curve will be quicker for surgeons that adopt it now. But it does kind of point to some of the studies that are out there that might compare SMILE to LASIK. I think some are unfair. If you look at a single center, single surgeon study that looks at SMILE versus LASIK, and that may be a surgeon that has had 10 or 20 years of LASIK experience, and then they adopt SMILE and then expect it to be the same as LASIK. And then when it's not, and a series of patients, to then say, well, look, I've proved it. SMILE's not as good as LASIK. It's really not a fair, you know, assessment. I would say, okay, in that person's hands, yes, SMILE's not as good as LASIK, but it doesn't mean across the whole country or in other people's hands that SMILE's not as good as LASIK. So as we've discussed, we all know that once we've worked through that learning curve, sure, we see the advantages, we've learned the techniques, and now we truly can say SMILE is the preferred technique for our patients. And so I think that the new observer that's looking at getting into SMILE versus LASIK, I think has to take all that in and understand when they make those decisions.
Absolutely. And speaking on those studies, especially with the early comparisons, there's one in particular that comes to mind where there's a contralateral study with LASIK and SMILE. And I really appreciate that this study was done, but when you look at the details, it's really comparing apples and oranges. The optical zones were different. The SMILE eye was less likely to hit the refractive target and ended up being myopic compared to the LASIK eye. And so it's really hard to compare subjective outcomes when you hit the target with one eye and you don't with the other. And there it's like anything. We saw those results early on too, where we had delayed healing, where we didn't quite hit the refractive target. We were doing some more enhancements, and it's just not the case anymore. And you talk to people who do a high volume of SMILE, and you know, they do it for a number of reasons. It's better for their patients, and I truly believe that they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't feel like it was the best thing for them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We've experimented with some of our marketing and messaging at our centers, and in one of our centers, we started off with just saying, we're not going to talk about SMILE or LASIK. We're just going to call it all laser eye surgery. And the patients that come in and looking for laser eye surgery, we say, we have a couple of different ways that we do it. On the day of surgery, the surgeon's going to make the best judgment. And at the time of the laser, is going to choose one of the two procedures that he thinks is best, he or she thinks is best for your eyes. But he says, okay, well, I'm getting laser eye surgery. Sounds great. Yeah, the doctor's going to choose what's best. And what we found when we take out the messaging, the doctors still choose smile for those patients. Obviously, there are some marketing advantages to using the term smile, but even when you take that away, if you just look at what is going to be the best outcome short-term and long-term for that patient, I think more and more surgeons are choosing smile like you and I have.
We certainly don't want to discount the marketing benefits. I mean, at the end of the day, we're running practices, they're businesses at the same time. And it is a very simple message. And what I've learned in marketing over the years that I've been in practice is that for most of the time, simple is better. It's something that's very easy to communicate to patients as to why this is still laser vision correction, why in our case, we may price it a little bit more and why we tout the benefits a bit more. But I think it's also important not to denigrate LASIK because it is still a great procedure, one that I had over 10 years ago and one that I'm very happy to provide for our patients. But yeah, this is something that people want, especially it seems to be the younger crowd. And if they don't qualify for smile, it's almost a disappointment. And we kind of talk through it, and most of the time they end up signing up for what they do qualify for. But yeah, there's more and more hype out there. And I think at some point we're going to get to the same level that Asia's had, where it really becomes more of the dominant laser vision correction procedure. We're not there yet, but it is certainly growing faster than LASIK here in the United States. Yeah, like I was mentioning, I visited 5 practices, including going to the London Vision course to really optimize our results, because early on they were okay, but we feel that we are a premium practice and okay is not good. We want to be better and best. And so there were a number of things that we learned. Number one is, as you're getting started, you don't want to dock more than a few times, without replacing the PI. Take your time. There's no reason that this has to be rushed. As you're dissecting, just make sure that there are smooth motions. Don't push too far. Don't stretch the stroma. As you're removing it, it can be a smooth motion. There can almost be a rexus, according to one study. We used to irrigate the interface. We no longer do that. That has been shown to slow down corneal healing. But even more, once the lenticule is out, what we found is that even more than LASIK, it's important to spread or distend the cap. I've been amazed just how I can look at a cornea and I can see a little bit of edema. And just by distending from the center to the periphery, be able to push that out, push any excess stroma out of that visual axis. And it has really improved the immediate results, and I greatly improved our 2015 day one results. It seems like it's something that wouldn't make a big difference, but we found in terms of speed of visual recovery that distending the cap at the end of the case does seem to speed up the process.
Yeah, Luke, I totally agree. I hadn't heard that term, distending the cap, but we have been doing something very similar, and I totally agree. I functionally, in my mind, picture it as a LASIK flap, and I'm trying to act like I'm smoothing out a LASIK flap from like central to periphery and just sort of getting that stroma to lay down smooth and push everything towards the periphery and then soak up any fluid or edema at the superior incision. But mentally, I'm sort of picturing that I'm smoothing the flap from central to periphery. And one of the things that I kind of had noticed when we did a couple early enhancements, when we did PRK on top of the cap, and when I removed the epithelium, I was surprised to see the cap having occasionally some microstria built into it, or little irregularities once the epithelium was removed. I thought, wow, I hadn't early on, we didn't put a lot of thought into sort of smoothing the cap out. But I realized later, particularly if you had to remove the epithelium for, let's say, a PRK enhancement, you see those little irregularities and then realize care should be taken to kind of distend and smooth out that cap and treat it just like a LASIK flap. And it allows that central visual acuity become pristine and also helps absorb or push away that central edema and allow for that faster recovery. So I totally agree, Luke, on that technique.
Yeah, I think you said it very well, that you can think of the cap like a LASIK flap. I usually tell our corneal refractive fellows to learn LASIK first, to push just a little bit harder. I mean, not hard enough to cause an epidefect, of course, but it does take just a little bit more pressure. And that usually helps them get to that next level as they're learning how to do this.
Since we started working on this podcast, the VisionMax 800 was approved by the FDA for smile procedures. And I was actually one of the first surgeons in the U.S. to experience a VisionMax 800. I'd like to share my initial experience with this new laser. You know, first of all, you know, my thoughts on the laser, you know, seeing the outcomes out of Europe and Dr. Reinstein and Dr. Brar showing their outcomes. They've done a recent study showing that the outcomes between the VisionMax 800 and the 500 were comparable, and showing that actually the efficacy was pretty similar. And that's more or less what we expect with the new 800. We're not seeing new treatment shapes or new treatment profiles. The profile is more or less the same. However, what we do see is the technology to achieve that outcome has taken a step forward. In particular, the speed, so the hertz efficiency of the laser is faster, and we're seeing that we're able to complete smile in less than 10 seconds for the laser portion. What this has translated in is an easier use from a surgeon aspect. Every time we see a laser that has increased speed and delivery, what we notice is actually a faster or easier dissection. So we've noticed over the years since femtosecond lasers are first approved, each time we take a step forward in speed, we also take a step forward in ease of dissection. The dissection planes tend to be a little cleaner, a little smoother, and thus easier to dissect. So not only are we going to see a faster laser delivery, but we're going to see a faster dissection. Dr. Reinstein showed that did translate when he did a study comparing the speed of 500 dissection to the speed of 800 dissections, that it was about half the speed for that VisionMax 800. So it more or less made it that much more efficient. Furthermore, there's some technology with the VisionMax 800 that allows for better or more accurate laser alignment. Two things: the center line, and that allows that laser to be treated on the visual axis. And the way it does that is it takes a map from the IOL Master 700 and helps document that central visual axis, and then translates that to the laser, and thus aligning that visual axis or that new treatment onto the visual axis. So we expect to see, you know, the less chance of having the potential of a decentered ablation, and more or less more precision, assuring that we have that ablation directly aligned with that visual axis. Furthermore, there's a step forward as far as alignment for astigmatism. The newest laser is going to allow for, you know, image tracking to align that treatment onto the astigmatism axis, so that you can be assured that the astigmatism axis is properly being treated. We expect that will ultimately, those two step forwards, in my opinion, will ultimately have a step forward in efficacy when the treatments are better aligned and astigmatism astigmatism axis is better aligned. I think that will translate into higher efficacy rates for this laser. You know, currently in my hands, the VisionMax 500 has greater than 95% of the patients achieving 20/20. So we already have a high bar to meet, but I do expect the VisionMax 800 to kind of take a step forward in achieving those outcomes and having a higher percentage of 20/20 patients for our practice and also across the U.S. Probably most importantly or most notably, I expect that the VisionMax 800 will allow for a better patient experience. You know, patients are always looking, you know, obviously for a great outcome, but and that's kind of taken for granted. Most patients just assume that they're going to have that great outcome, but they're also assuming they're going to have an easy or straightforward patient experience. I think speed is one of those things that directly translates to better patient experience. I think less time underneath the actual laser, less time for dissection will allow for more or less a better patient experience and achieving their outcome. Furthermore, I think this is going to translate to a better surgeon experience, less stress on the surgeon. I think with a faster laser delivery, we'll have a lower chance of having things like suction break that may allow for or may result in aborting that procedure. I think the chance of that is going to be much lower with that faster laser delivery. So also, you know, what I was blown away with is more or less the technology that's in the VisionMax 800. I sort of liken it to, let's say, you know, driving a new age electric car, let's say new age Tesla, with all the cameras and alignment and technology that goes into, you know, sort of the latest and greatest or the most recent or modern automotive experience. That type of technology and digital experience is being seen with this new VisionMax 800. And I expect that, you know, it sets a new bar as far as what we're expecting when we have state-of-the-art equipment to achieve that refractive outcome. So I think surgeons are going to be happy with this this new upgrade, as well as patients. And I think it's going to set sort of a new gold standard for what surgeons are going to choose when they want to do vision correction. So in summary, we're really excited about the VisionMax 800. I think it does kind of, you know, encompass a lot of the key things that we're looking for to deliver the best outcomes for our patients.
Well, Luke, as always, it's great catching up and learning from you, and great to hear your story about what got you into doing Smile and how you've incorporated it into your practice. It's really helped me sort of reinforce and reiterate what our practice has done, but it's great to hear it from you as well.
Well, Bill, I echo those comments. I was very excited to be here, and every time I talk to you, I always learn something. Thank you for your time, and let's go do more Smile.